you have to try it before you're ready. Because if you don't, you're never going to get to the point where you're 100% ready, 100% competent, unless you get in there and try it. You know, that's partially why we call it the practice of dentistry.
Welcome to the Digital Smile Hub, the podcast that is dedicated to making clinical dentistry simple. Join us as we decode the complexities of dental care by providing actionable insights into the diverse aspects of clinical practice, the latest trends, and the newest technologies. Whether you're a seasoned clinician or just starting out of dental school, listen in on engaging discussions, expert interviews, and a wealth of tips and tricks to enhance your clinical workflows. So turn up that volume and get ready to transform your clinical practice with the Digital Smile Hub. And now, here's your host, Dr. Tim Anderson.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Digital Smile Hub. I'm Dr. Tim Anderson, and for those of you returning, welcome. And for you new listeners, welcome to the family, where we talk everything all digital, all smile design, all anything clinical related dentistry. So this is a great episode because we have a unbelievable guest who's one of my favorite people. I've got to spend a lot of time with him over the years and has really kind of helped inspire me to do better with regards to not only my dentistry, both clinically and surgically, but also one of the areas in my own personal life that I feel like a lot of people know me for, which is photography. He actually is the one, like, you got to have those people in your life that like push you. And so we're going to talk about all things photography with regards to dentistry. And I'm excited because this is going to go in so many different ways. I would like to welcome to the Digital Smile Hub, Dr. Nagao, coming to us from Arizona. Josh Nagao is one of the mentor faculty with Implant Pathway. He's a great educator, a lecturer, a mentor for me, and he's a lover of photography. So welcome to the podcast, Josh.
Happy to be here, Tim. That was a lot of really nice things.
I know.
I didn't know there were so many nice things to say.
Well, so for those that don't know, Josh and I, you know, we got to spend a little bit of time recently in Miami where Josh and I got to hang out at Sprint Race 3D Next event, which was awesome. But what was really awesome is it allows like a lot of us that see each other once in a while to kind of reconnect and just kind of hang out in a non like teaching aspect. Like we actually got to hang out where we weren't teaching. We were the attendees, which was kind of
fun. You get to socialize a little bit.
I know, right? So we don't always get that. But Josh, for the listeners who, you know, I kind of gave you a little intro, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, where you practice, and what kind of dentistry you're doing these days.
Okay, so I graduated in 2015 from the Ohio State University.
I will
catch so much heat if I don't say the Ohio State.
I gotta interrupt you. Is that like a thing, like you have, I feel like everybody that goes to Ohio is like, you have to do that. If you don't do that, it's like you're like shamed. Is there like a club or a board that...
Tim, we tried to trademark the word "the."
Of course you did. See, I went to Minnesota. It's just different because like we hear like UW, and then I think of Wisconsin, and then you talk to other people in the country like, no, that's University of Washington. But
I think
nobody
of Washington.
Thinks of any. If you're like "the" and you stop, everybody thinks of "the."
Everyone knows.
Oh man. All right.
It's true.
So you went
trademark didn't
you went to the greatest school on earth, right?
I did. Ohio State was great. I graduated in 2015 and I grew up in Utah and we wanted to be a little bit further west just to be closer to family. So we moved out to Arizona and shortly after graduation I bought a private practice where we are still in business, thankfully. I kind of describe my practice as a full mouth practice. So it's a general practice. I'm a general practitioner. I'm not a specialist. I do have diplomate status in the ABOI, but I'm just a general practitioner, just like, you know, probably a ton of your listeners. But what I really like is kind of looking at the bigger picture. So where 50% of my cases might be, you know, crowns, single implants, stuff like that, probably 50% is a combination of full mouth rehabs on teeth, full mouth rehabs that involve teeth and implants, or all on four or full arch implant style prosthesis.
I think that's important for people to hear because you're a 2015 grad. So, I mean, you're under 10 years of clinical practice and time flies. But what I think is interesting to, and I think is important for people to understand is that how you've created that world of what you're doing, because that didn't happen by accident. I mean, when you talk about smile design and when you talk about full arch dentistry, whether it's on teeth, partially on implants or full implants, I think one of the things that I think is important for our listeners to understand is that Josh's journey didn't happen just because he was just showing up and just doing drill and fill. Josh is nonchalant about how much CE he has taken and how much education you've really jumped into, because I think that's really what's helped shape your journey. So talk to us a little bit, because I think it's important for the listeners to understand. I graduated in 2011. Josh is doing things. I'm like, how do I do that? And I think it's important for us to take a step back to learn your journey. So like, all right, you got done with school. Where did you go from where you fresh graduate to where you are today in private practice?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. So actually, I want to step back a little bit from even before graduation. One of the really cool things that happened is that I kind of know how it happened, but I finished all my clinical requirements third year of dental school. So that fourth year, the school basically said, hey, there's no one left for you. Your charts are going to these other students because they have to finish up too. So they said, go find something to do. And I kind of was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I had been volunteering at this community clinic. It ran a couple times every month, kind of in the evening, and local dentists would come, basically like a toothache clinic. So if someone had a toothache, they would come. Extraction was the only option. But I met this oral surgeon that worked out in the kind of the sticks of Ohio. So one night I was there and I said, hey, would you mind if I came to your office and kind of shadowed you? The school doesn't really have anything else for me. So they just want me to go out and shadow, kind of get some experience. And he said, of course, come to the office. And this experience that I had over the next 3 or 4 months kind of shaped my career. I walked in the first day and he literally had me doing everything from day one. I mean, starting IVs, general anesthesia, intubation, extractions. And like I said, it was kind of like backwoods Ohio. So it wasn't fancy dentistry. It wasn't all on X type stuff. It wasn't actually, he did no implants even as a oral surgeon. It was full mouth extractions on bombed out teeth, hard impacted third molars, managing soft tissue in these cases, managing, you know, learning to get teeth out without breaking stuff. That's the hard part in surgery. It's not hard. I say this all the time when I'm mentoring. It's not hard to put a screw in a hole. My 5-year-old can put a screw in a hole. It's managing everything else that goes into it. It's how do we shape the soft tissue? How do we create new soft tissue? How do we create new bone? Where are these implants going to go? How are we going to close something? What do we do when there's a complication? What do we do? You know, we hear in dental school, oh my gosh, if you see a sinus membrane, you're probably going to die and get sued. You know, so it was overcoming all of those kind of fears that were built in through school to say, hey, this isn't so bad. I can probably do this stuff. So I graduated and I loved surgery. I already had kind of a taste for anesthesia. So I thought about doing an anesthesia residency, but that was like, my wife was like, dude, we have to make some money. Like
you have to work. Happy wife, happy life, man. I've been there. Yeah.
She's like, we're not doing 3 more years of school. Like it's time to make some money. So I immediately, you know, started into kind of like my CE journey. So one of the first things I did was IV sedation. So I do a ton of IV sedation. A lot of our patients come in for IV sedation. I would honestly say that's part of why I started getting into these bigger cases, because when people haven't been to the dentist for years and years because they're so scared, if they know they can be put to sleep, they'll come into your office and they'll say, hey, I'm just here because I know you put people to sleep.
Isn't it amazing? Like we take that for granted with regards to all the barriers to get patients to say yes. And so much of it is just psychological, of like just simple things like offering sedation. And I mean, that's a totally different topic and a different podcast, but it's one of those situations where the anxieties of patients limit our capabilities to provide this amazing care that we can do. But when you eliminate that barrier for them to say yes, all of a sudden it's like it opens this door to allow you to maximize your potential, them to get the care that they want and they need. And it's all just stuff that we didn't learn in dental school, which is what's amazing.
Absolutely. And it's so much more time convenient, because if you can, even if you're doing general restorative, you know, instead of having a patient in for a couple fillings, if you say, hey, we can do everything in this arch in one appointment, you put them to sleep. And maybe that appointment's longer, maybe it's 2 or 3 hours. But you're doing that instead of bringing that patient back two or three or four times. That's better for your chair time. It's more convenient for the patient. It's, you know, no one wants to take 4 days off of work to get a bunch of fillings done. Maybe they do if they hate their job, but no one really wants to do that. There's so many other things that they'd rather do. So that really, you know, the patients that are looking for sedation that are scared of going to the dentist, they're the ones that have a ton of work to do because it's been so long since they've been in. So that kind of threw me into the world of I'm getting all these patients that need all this stuff. You know, I'm comfortable doing surgery. And I've always been one that's, I'm never afraid to try something. Like I'm one of those that will jump before I'm ready, which I think is really important for people to do. Especially when they're getting into something new, like you have to try it before you're ready, because if you don't, you're never going to get to the point where you're 100% ready, 100% competent, unless you get in there and try it. You know, that's partially why we call it the practice of dentistry. So I've always been kind of like jumping into these things before I was really ready, and just kind of, it makes you figure it out as you go. So that kind of turned into, instead of doing, oh, a couple fillings here, crown here, I had to really start looking at, okay, let me take a step back because this patient needs way more than that. And I had to learn that in school, just like none of us did. You know, we didn't learn full mouth rehabilitations. We didn't learn full mouth, full arch implant stuff. We didn't learn opening the vertical, and maybe we did, but it was this mysterious, but the VDO, you know, it was kind of like one of those woo-woo words, the VDO. And we're like, what is the VDO? Like, how do you change the VDO?
Don't open it. Honestly, you'll cripple somebody, man. You got to be careful.
The patient will die. You saw their sinus and you opened the VDO?
I think it's, you guys, for those of you that are fresh out of school, we chuckle because Josh and I have been practicing for a while, and we do more of these types of cases. But I do think it highlights a point where sometimes out of school, we get crippled by fear. We're so hesitant to do anything because we're afraid of screwing up. And part of this is just like Josh said, like it's the practice of dentistry. We learn more through our failures than we ever do through our successes. And so we need to feel confident and really feel like we have a safe environment to fail. And that's what's so amazing about mentorship and CE. And so that's why I want you guys to hear, I know we're here to talk about photography, but I want you guys to hear Josh's journey, because Josh went from this new grad to where he is now, and it didn't happen by accident. And I want new grads who are sitting here listening to this going, hey, this isn't me. I don't do all on X. I don't do full mouth rehabs. I do drill and fill. That's fine. But I want you to realize that even if you're just doing basic restorative dentistry, like you're going to get into situations where you're going to screw up. You're going to fail. And that's okay. That's part of how we learn. And that's what makes us better as clinicians. We can't be afraid of it. We just need to move through it. So Josh, keep going, man.
Absolutely. So actually that brings up kind of a story that happened to me this week. I had somebody reach out that I had met through another CE program that I was at. I'll give him a shout out, Dr. Michael Allen and Dr. James Heaton. They do an institute called Smile Trend, and they invited me for the second day. I was teaching the first day, so I couldn't make it to the first day, but they do very, very high cosmetic, super, super like minimal prep or no prep veneer course. That's incredible. So I got invited to the second day because I was teaching the first day and couldn't make it. But I met some doctors there, and that's one of the cool things about CE is you find other people that are wanting to learn the same things as you. You meet people that aren't just going to, you know, the yearly required state CE that's, you know, emergency medicine or I don't know, whatever's required in your state every 3 years or 2 years or whatever. You meet these people that have the same drive as you and that are passionate about dentistry and that want to learn. So this other dentist reached out to me and she says, hey, I have a friend that he has been following you on Instagram for a while and he loves everything you're doing. He wants to figure out, you know, how he can get to that. He's thinking about doing a prosthodontics residency. Can he call you and just, can you talk to him for a little while? I was like, sure, of course. So he and his wife, they're both dentists. And I hopped on a call with both of them. They were both on. And he, one of the things he said was, and what you said reminded me of this. He said, you know, a residency sounds good to me because someone's there to tell me this works and this doesn't work. And I said, that's great. But wouldn't it be better if you knew if it worked or didn't work? And that's kind of what you said about, you know, just because someone says, oh, this is scary, or just because someone says, oh, that technique doesn't work, that doesn't mean that it actually doesn't work. they may have done it wrong. It may have been a bad clinical scenario. It could have been a bad patient choice. There's so many reasons that things might not work. But the simple fact, and he in the end kind of asked my opinion, like, what would you do? And I said, there's no way I would go to school for that much longer to be doing exactly what I'm doing. And part of that is because the learning happens when you actually have to start to problem solve and think critically and, oh, dude, I messed this up bad. Like, how am I going to fix it so I don't get sued? Or these temporaries look freaking terrible, or whatever happened and this it failed. Like, you have to go through that because that's how you learn. You don't learn on the cases that are easy. You learn on the shit that's hard.
And
because you never want to do it again.
Man, amen to that. And that's, I think this ties in really, really well to like the core concept of what we're talking tonight, because practicing over and over and doing the same thing over and over is tough when you get, you know, the same results. So like practice. And everybody thinks, oh, like, I'm not perfect at it. Like, it's not working. The goal with this is just to get better. And every time to do better, whether it's a dental implant, whether it's a class 2 filling, whether it's a veneer, whether it's a crown, it doesn't really matter. The point of this is to get better. And I will argue to the end of the earth that when I look at dental technology and things that move the needle with regards to CE or education, the number one factor that moves the needle faster and further than anything in the world is photography. And the reason I believe that so much is because without photography, we don't have anything to hold us accountable. So we'll see a case like, it looks great. And if we don't take the photos to analyze it later, we never have the capability to be like, oh man, I could have gotten better if I had done X or Y or Z or whatever it is, if we just move through it. And, you know, photography, you know, and the reason I wanted Josh to talk about photography is because not only is Josh a phenomenal photographer, what I love about Josh, and Josh, I'm going to give you props here, man, because I've gotten to witness Josh's journey through photography. So when Josh started posting on Instagram, started doing things, his photography was okay. It was
probably taken with an
iPhone, you know,
honestly.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, the point is Josh got started. He just started taking, and if I can give one piece of advice to anybody who's looking into improving their skill set or the CE or anything like that, just get started. Just start. You don't need the fanciest camera. You don't need it. Just use an iPhone. Use whatever. Just get started. But what Josh did is Josh moved from basic photography and continued to progress. He got better. And you could see the progression as he took more photos and more photos. And if you look at Josh's Instagram, which I feel like we need another podcast on your Instagram handle, which, Josh, what's your Instagram handle?
It's an
entirely different podcast, because that's an awesome Instagram handle. But when you look at his Instagram, like, and you look at the evolution of his photography, like, you guys, you'll see this amazing growth of quality and clarity with regards to his storytelling and his imagery and all of that. And that just happens because of progress. You just got to keep practicing. So let's dive into this photography aspect, because I think one of the challenges we have as dentists is we don't slow down, and we're constantly busy, and we're running around with our heads cut off, or jumping into hygiene checks, and we're doing fillings, and crap goes wrong, and the front desk needs us, and our assistant, whatever it is. And one of the things that we fail to slow down to do well is photography and document. Let's start with the most basic aspect, because I think most clinicians are like, hey, I do some photography. They're usually just using that intraoral camera, like that little wand thingy. So, like, let's talk a little bit about the wand and why the wand is okay, but some of the limitations and the downsides with the wand.
Sure. Well, I mean, like you said, the wand is certainly better than nothing. You know, I think the wand, I think a lot of people have gotten into that because they want to be able to show their patient. You know, you kind of mentioned that accountability was one of the really great aspects of photography. Totally agree with that. I also think communication is another huge aspect of one of the benefits of photography, whether it's communicating with a patient or communicating with a lab, potentially communicating with people that you're trying to mentor or to teach. You know, it's so much easier to pull up a photo and say, look at this as how it is than to stand up on a whiteboard and try to draw something out, or, you know, chicken scratch a little thing on a piece of paper for a patient, or, you know, tell a story through words. You can tell that story, but if you can tell it in photos and someone can see it, you know, the stupid old adage is a picture is worth a thousand words, or whatever, you know, whatever, however many words it is. That's totally true. You know, even those little basic intraoral cameras are really good at starting to be able to tell story to a patient. They're good at documenting a little bit. But I think one of the really big downsides of those cameras is the field of view is so small that you're really limited to kind of single tooth dentistry on it, because that's what you're showing the patient. That's what you're looking back at. So when you're going back and looking at their x-rays and maybe these intraoral photos, you're looking at PAs and bite wings that are showing maybe a couple teeth, maybe up to a quadrant. And then you look at these photos, that's the same thing. You're looking at maybe a couple teeth. And when you're only looking at one or two teeth, you're going to look at a tooth and you're going to say, okay, this tooth looks fine. This tooth has a big old amalgam in it and there's some fracturing. Yeah, maybe that one needs a crown. Oh, I saw in the PA that one needs a, maybe we send that one to endo. But you're really limiting your view because you're not seeing the whole picture, because you're literally looking at a very small portion of the patient's whole mouth or whole face.
And even, I think this highlights an even bigger underlying issue with regards to so many clinicians. And I was one of these, you guys. I was that guy that was like, I just don't do that many quote unquote large cases because I don't have those in my practice. But then when you start evaluating the type of dentistry that you're showing the patient, I mean, I'm showing patients single tooth dentistry. So what do you think is going to fill my schedule?
That's
single tooth dentistry. So I think this highlights the bigger picture of we're dealing with the oral cavity and the mouth, and in the mouth frames, you know, the whole picture. It's the full face. It's not just the teeth. I mean, you look at so many, like, and this is what kills me as Instagram. Like, you see so many really good before and after smile retracted photos, but you don't see many full face photos. And I think a lot of that ties to the fact that a lot of these cases are not that great when they're not zoomed in on just the teeth. When you put it into the whole bigger picture, it changes. And for those of you doing, you know, larger implant cases and fixed full arch or even denture cases, you really understand this, because how many times you have something on an articulator digitally or analog and it looks fantastic, and then you put it in the mouth and you're like, oh boy, this looks, you know, awful. And so one of the things I want to emphasize, and if you take anything away of some of the things that Josh and I are talking about, is that when we look at taking single tooth images, by taking single tooth images, you are going to transform and change a single tooth. But if you fail to capture the entire big picture, the full smile and the full face, you will never truly transform that patient's smile and that, and then their whole experience. And we're missing that opportunity to transform people's lives and create patient advocates of within our practice, because we're limiting ourselves to these tiny little wand photos of cracked teeth, which are great for insurance claims, but they're not good for moving the needle or moving people to say yes to the best within dentistry. So the wand, it is what it is.
It's a good thing to have, I think, but not necessarily. You know, you say that people will say, oh, Tim, you know, you're doing all these full cases, full, you know, big full arch cases, like you must have like a fancy office, or you must be in like the right part of town, or whatever. They say, that's just not my patient population, or I live in a XYZ part of town, you know, I just don't have patients that can afford that. And my thought that pops in my head is, well, how many patients do you tell them that they need this, that they need something like
right?
that. And honestly, it's probably zero, because they're so focused on, oh, we have to do this little filling, oh, we have to do this crown, that they miss the big wear cases. They miss all these big cases because they just don't tell the patient that they need it. And it's not, there's so many teeth. Like, yeah, there's areas in the country that have a lot of dentists, but there are plenty of teeth and plenty of mouths for everyone. It's not like me and Tim and all these people that you see doing these big cases have some kind of special, you know, special bait or something that brings patients in for big cases. Like, one of the interesting things about my practice is we do zero marketing. We don't do ads. We do literally nothing. In nearly 10 years of owning my office, I think the only advertising we've done is we've put up a little, like the screen at my daughter's gymnastics, like a photo, just because whatever we spend on that goes towards her gymnastics tuition. That's it. So it's not like we're doing this heavy marketing into, oh, you need All on X stuff. Oh, you need full mouth rehabs. Oh, you need veneers. Nothing. It's just by telling people what they need and explaining the benefits of what can be done and showing them, hey, look, here's a patient that was in your almost exact situation, and this is how it turned out for that patient.
What I think
and they're like, holy crap, I'm gonna.
I think that highlights a lot of good things, because I do feel like we live in this day and age where there's so much pressure to just market. And what I challenge everybody, and I see this, like when you add new technology, like, you know, the whole adage, like, you know, give somebody a hammer, everything's a nail. I remember for me, like when I first got a CO2 laser, all of a sudden it was like, I started seeing things differently. I started seeing all the, you know, localized recession between 24, 25 that were due to a high frenum attachment, or I started seeing all these tongue ties that were causing, you know, speech issues or airway issues. And all of a sudden I started seeing things different. And I think that highlights the power of CE and being aware of your current patient base, because we have this huge patient base already that oftentimes is this untapped market that if we don't tell people what we can do and we don't actually address their actual concerns, it never happens. And I think the longer you're practicing, the more this becomes difficult, because when you start a practice, every patient's new. When you acquire a practice, you're the new guy and bringing this new look. What gets challenging is when you're in my shoes and your shoes, where we've been in practice for, you know, 10, 15 years, and we have patients that have been with us for those 10, 15 years, and now all of a sudden we're saying, Mrs. Jones, I didn't realize this, but this is what I'm learning and what I'm seeing, and this is what we need to do. And part of that is just being humble enough to say, you guys, we don't know everything. And it's okay to say we don't know everything. And when you have that open, upfront honesty with your patients from the standpoint of, like, we're doing what's best for them, it also opens the door, but you have this huge patient base within your own practice where you don't need to market. So Josh,
I think it's a great point. Sorry to interrupt. I think that's a great point what you said. I mean, like, you know, why would we think that in dentistry, that if we go to a CE and learn something that, you know, we can't go back and tell our patients that, because they'll think, oh my gosh, my doctor didn't know this before. Like, think if you were going to a cancer doctor and, like, you want the latest, the greatest, the best thing. And if the doctor says, hey, there's this new drug on the market, it came out like 3 months ago, it's been super promising, the studies show this and this and this, you're going to be like, hell yeah, I want to do this one, not the one that's 30 years old and, you know, has it ever changed since then? So in dentistry, it's the same thing. Like, we should be, and I think your patients realize that, especially if you're keeping up with technology and you're taking CE and your patients see that, that they have a way bigger confidence in you, because they always think, my doctor's learning this, or Osh went to this CE on this, you know, we saw pictures of it on the website or on Instagram or whatever. And to kind of jump to a different subject that kind of sparked a little thought in my head, you know, we get so busy during the day that we're doing treatment, we're trying to do exams, we're trying to, you know, fend our hygienists from bothering us, we're trying to manage an office, a lot of us, I mean, employees and everything that comes with that, that really, how long do we have to sit and do an exam with a patient, a thorough, really good exam where we can step back and look at everything? So it kind of brings it back to the photography aspect. If you don't have photos, you can't do that. You can't just look back and say, oh yeah, I went through the x-rays, I didn't see any decay. Okay, that's fine. But that doesn't mean that there's not thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of dentistry that could potentially benefit that patient.
Oh,
that they would probably say,
it's
yes.
It's amazing when you just put up an image of a patient. Like, my favorite thing in the world to do with a lot of my new patients and even existing patients, you just take an intraoral retracted photo or a full face smile photo and blow it up really big and just put it in the op. And then you go, oh, hold on, Mrs. Jones, I got to step out for a second and walk away. And you just leave their photo up there. It is amazing what people will all of a sudden start picking out within their own smile. They don't like this.
I've had patients say, whose mouth is that? I'm like,
it's yours.
That's yours. I'm like, oh my God.
Right.
But so I think having those images, you know, like during those little short exams we have with the patient, you might not have time to step back and look at the whole picture. You might be running, I don't know, there's these crazy offices, yours might be like this, Tim, where they have three hygienists and they're running a bunch of four columns of hygiene and blah, blah, blah. There's no way you can sit and fully, truly diagnose. But going back to those photos, maybe you have some downtime and you're like, I'm going to take some photos on every patient. Maybe you review some of those. You know, you're not going to go over the 18-year-old with totally virgin teeth that just got out of ortho that loves their smile. But if you start going over some of these cases, the next time this patient comes in, you say, hey, Mr. Jones, I looked over your photos that we took the other day. I had some real time to kind of sit down and think about this. They're going to, number one, love that you were thinking about their case when they're not even there. And number two, you're going to have so much more time to look into, well, what can be done? What can we do to improve this patient's function or aesthetics or health in general, that these cases, these big cases that everyone thinks is like the holy grail, they just start coming up because you tell people that they
You start seeing the dentistry. And I think that's the point with photography, is not only do your patients see it, you start seeing it. And you look at your own cases, your own existing patient base. I mean, even from treatment planning, like when we're starting to look at integrating software and AI design and, you know, whether it's smile design or whatever, like having the photos is critical to being able to do this. And, you know, I think the listeners are starting to get like, hey, Tim and Josh believe very heavily that photography is a critical component of just honestly dentistry. Like, it's not even like a thing you got to add. It really, and it kills me that our education programs don't really hammer this out, that this is, I would argue, and honestly, in my opinion, like I would rather have a photo series than perio probing. The photos tell the story. And I need those in order to do anything that I'm doing. And one of the things that I think we need to address, because I want to get to two things. One, I want to get to capturing the photos, and then we can dive into, because I think then, like, dentists are so like geeked out. We want tech, like what photo to use, what settings to use. Like, I don't want to dive into that. What I want to dive into is how do we get there? Because some of us, we're all different journeys. Some of us are fresh out of school, or we're in a practice where we are not taking photos. And it's okay to admit that you don't take photos, because here's the deal. Most practices are not taking photos. So if you're not taking photos, you are the norm. Don't worry about it. What I want to challenge you is start small. Just start with your new patients. Don't start with everybody, just start with new patients. But Josh, how you went from not taking photos to integrating photos into your practice, and talk to us a little bit about your workflow with your team of how you guys capture images, who's doing it, how you're doing it, all of that.
Yeah, love that. So we started, like a lot of people do, just with the phone. I mean, today's phones have honestly pretty exceptional cameras on them. So if that's all you have and you have a new phone that has a great camera, I mean, you have a pretty expensive camera already in your pocket. So I would start there, and I would say get some lighting for it. One of the most important things, you know, everyone's like, oh, do you shoot Sony or Nikon or Canon, or, you know, what do you shoot? And I'm like, who cares about the body of your camera? There's two things that I think are the most important in photography. Number one, the lighting. And number two, the lens that you choose.
All right, hold on. Please repeat that, because this is so important for everybody to truly understand. It does not matter the brand. What are the two most important aspects to dental photography?
Yeah, honestly, the only two things that matter in dental photography are, number one, lighting, and number two, the lens that 100%. You choose. It doesn't matter if you have a 10-year-old DSLR. It doesn't matter if you have the newest, best, highest megapixel mirrorless. That will make much less of a difference than a $50 lens will to a $1,500 lens, or a flash on your phone versus a professional lighting setup. That's what will make a difference in your photos, is the lens that you choose, making sure you're choosing the appropriate lens for the appropriate application, and the lighting that you choose.
I am a big believer of keep it simple, don't overcomplicate it. My setup for photography, I got it when my oldest son was born, so it is 13 years old, my camera body. 13 years. And it takes just as good images as anything out there on the market now because, like Josh said, number one is lighting. Number two is investing in a good glass or a good lens.
So whatever camera you have, number one, find a lighting setup that works for you. If that's a phone, get some separate lighting than just the flash. Or if you don't have lighting, like start to use the flash on your phone. But get whatever subject you're shooting illuminated. And obviously this is a little bit different because we could be talking about full face photography. We could be talking about just smile only photography. We could be talking about intraoral or, you know, I do a lot of photography that we're taking during surgery that I want to show a certain area or maybe the arch potentially, or details of a specific procedure, you know, like the very fine details of a suture or a suture technique or a material or whatever it might be. So those are all going to be super different applications. And I don't know that you necessarily want this podcast to turn into use a 90 millimeter macro when you're doing this. And you know, it's not like what's tough about dentistry. And I find this in general, whether it's photography or teaching someone surgery or teaching someone kind of how these big cases can go is it's never an A to Z, just list of steps in any of this. It always depends a little bit. So what's the best lens for XYZ? I don't know. It depends. What's your lighting setup? Where are you taking these photos? What are you trying to capture? There's so many things that go into it. So we can give you some general things, but you know, like I said, I don't know that we necessarily want to turn this into, hey, here's a shopping list, go buy this. But kind of that progression would be, you know, start with whatever you have. If you have a phone, great, use a phone, start doing that. You'll start to get a little bit better and a little bit better. And you'll get to the point where you'll have a desire to say, okay, I'm ready to move up to the next thing. And that might be, hey, I'm going to hop on eBay or I'm going to hop on Facebook Marketplace and I'm going to get an old DSLR body. And I'll, you know, maybe it comes with a couple lenses, you know, throw a nice lighting setup on that. Honestly, I guarantee you'll get some phenomenal photos. That's what I started with. I had this old Nikon that I don't even remember where I got it, but I bought like a twin flash setup for it with some diffusers. And I was like, dude, this blows my phone away. Like this is, and that was like an instant upgrade. And then the next thing, maybe you want to move to like mirrorless with like off camera lighting. So there's just like a little bit of a progression, but just honestly, just find a budget that you're comfortable with and like start somewhere. And I honestly, like that's it. Start somewhere.
I think that's the point. Like start, you just need to start, whether it's your iPhone or DSLR, whatever it might be. And what you'll find is that if you start implementing it every day, you will get better. And the key with that is you'll outgrow your equipment. And that's my favorite thing. I promise you, you will outgrow your equipment. There's not some magic settings. There's not some magic camera setup like Josh said. It's you just need to start practicing and playing with it. But I cannot emphasize enough that the key to capturing really good intraoral, extraoral, marketing, product photography, it's all based on light. An external light source, and it doesn't need to be crazy expensive, it just needs to be an external light source, will totally transform your photography.
And honestly, to that point, sorry to interrupt, I think an easy way that's instantly viewable to the people that are watching this is look at Tim's video quality right now versus my video quality. Tim is in a studio with off-camera lighting. He has some background effect lighting going on. I'm just like up at Implant Pathway, just walked out of surgery. So I snuck into Justin Moody's podcast room. I got like fluorescent lights. I'm on my freaking webcam. But look at the difference in how crisp Tim's is. Like the aspect ratio is nice. He's framed well. The lighting casts nice shadows. When in mine, it's like, I'm freaking Asian and my skin like looks all washed out compared to Tim.
So Josh, so, you know, when it comes to photography, I honestly think when we look at photography, I think if you would ask dentists, is photography important? I do believe that everybody is going to say, yes, you should do it. But at the same time, we don't do it. What do you see as some of the barriers to why we don't take images, and how have you kind of overcome some of those?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I think cost could be one. You know, they think it's going to be too expensive to get into it. And honestly, even if you wanted to get old body and a lens and a lighting setup, you could do that for a few hundred dollars and you could honestly get really, really nice images from. So I think cost might be one that's a fear, but I think that it shouldn't actually be a fear. If people looked into it, I think they could find affordable setups that they could get easy access to. I think the biggest one is time. People just think like, oh, dude, I don't have time to do that. And I will tell you, it takes longer to do cases with photography than it does without. For sure, 100%. But what you have to do is you have to make it as easy as possible. So you have to realize, number one, okay, this is going to take longer. This patient exam is going to take longer because we're going to have photos. So that might mean longer chair time. That might mean... And hopefully my biggest thing recommendation for this is you have to train your staff to be able to do this. Like, there's no way that as the doctor, you have time to take photos of every single patient that comes in your office.
I think that's the big difference.
You can't do it. You won't do it. If that's the thing, you're not going to do it.
You hit a point that is such a powerful aspect for everything that I believe in from the standpoint of, the only way, and the ironic, here's the deal. The ironic part is I'm one of the worst people at this because I'm a control freak. But the key to excelling with photography is exactly what Josh said. You have to get out of the way, and this needs to be a team-driven thing. Like, as the doctor, as the surgeon, as the clinician, like, if you're constantly having to, okay, I took, you know, I prepped the tooth. Now I got to deglove, and I got to get the mirrors, and I got to get the camera, and then I got to take a picture, and then I got to re-glove, and then... All of a sudden, there's too many reasons like, nope, I'm not going to do it. Versus creating, like being aware that of the pain points of it's going to take a little bit more time and creating an environment that allows your team to help out and excel. And here's the deal. You give your team the opportunity to grow and do great things. They will do great things. I promise you. They 100% will. But if you never give them the opportunity, or if it's only when you're doing like quote unquote big cases, that's when you do it. They never get the reps. And so, of course, they're going to be terrified to do it. And then they get the bad images. And then you don't want to do it.
They're going to be assistants. And yeah, they're going to be assistants and auxiliary that know how to suction spit. And that's it. But if you take time to train your staff to do literally everything that you are not required to be doing by law as a dentist, I mean, that's what I want my assistants to do. They should do every single thing that is not listed in my state that a dentist is required to do. They should be doing
that. Amen.
And because of that, number one, they find way more joy in their job because it's interesting. It's not standing there just sucking spit. But number two, they, and this is kind of selfish of me, if they go to another office, if they leave my office, they're not going to be doing what they do at my office. They're going to be suctioning spit because that's what everyone else has assistants do. They're not going to be taking these photos. They're not going to be doing exocad and design and milling and, you know, painting neo and stacking porcelain on full arch zirconia. They're going to be suctioning spit, and that blows.
Yeah, you create a
so
culture,
you
man.
Really create a lot of, yeah, you create value in not just money. You don't, you're like, money is great, but if someone loves their job and they're like, dude, I'm a dental assistant, I do all this stuff, and then somebody else says, I'm a dental assistant too, I don't get to do any of that stuff. There's automatic value built into that. So it has to be something that is auxiliary driven. So I don't take any of our new patient. I really don't take that many photos anymore unless we're like in a procedure and I want to get something specific, but it's all assistant driven. So they're taking our new patient series. They're taking pretty much everything. They're taking all of our records appointments for these big cases that we do. Really, I'm to the point that I will just grab the camera in surgery, like a barriered camera, make it easy, grab it, snap a photo, and we're good to go. And honestly, sometimes I'll just have them do that while I'm kind of still working. It just makes it quick and easy. So, you know, it has to be convenient because it will take you a little more time, but I think that time will be offset by the value in having that photography.
Well, and what I love that you're doing is you just moved beyond just the simple stuff, because I want everybody to just move beyond the wand. So getting your team comfortable with your intraoral series. And I'm a big advocate for the intraoral series should be whatever is required for the type of procedures you're doing. So in my office, the procedure that requires the most photography is usually some type of ortho or aligners. So whatever Invisalign, SureSmile, Candid, like whatever it is, that's my photo series that I need these photos in order to do everything, whether it's smile design, ortho, occlusal guard, filling, you know, whatever it might be. Start there. Just start with intraoral photography. And that's one that needs to be team driven. Doctors, get the heck out of the way. You should not be doing any of this. That's team driven. And what I would advocate is that as your team members are doing this, you need to take the time to review these images with them, to give them feedback. Because if people just take images and nobody gives feedback, they think they're doing just fine. And if you're in your head, you're going, this sucks, it's not good, but you're never talking with them, guess what happens? Nobody gets good at it. Everybody gets frustrated and it fails. So spend the time to talk with your team and work with your team in order to prove and level up. The other aspect with this is the next level. And this is where I think Josh does better than I would argue anybody, way better than me, is that you move beyond just the intraoral documentation for pre-surgical and pre-workup, moving to the surgical / procedural photography and why we do that. So Josh, you do a really, really good job of documenting all the steps within your procedures. Talk to us a little bit here about why you do that and some of the added benefits of documenting so thoroughly through all your procedures.
Yeah, that's, I think a really good question. I love that you start with kind of the series that requires the most photos, because if you start there, no matter what you do, you're going to have the photos you need. You know, if you start and you tell your assistants are trained to just take a smile photo, a retracted, and maybe like a lateral profile, you might get into a case where you're like, oh shit, I wish we had an occlusal shot, or oh shit, I wish we had a retracted shot. So if you start with that series that's going to require the most, and you always take that as your base, then you'll always have the base that you will never go back and you'll say, oh man, I wish we had this photo, because you won't have missed it. As far as procedurally, this might just sound dumb, but I take photos where I think that I would benefit from learning. Because when I'm taking procedural shots, these are not shots we're showing to a patient. You know, a patient doesn't want to see a flapped open maxilla or an intraosseous suture or, I don't know, whatever it might be that we're taking a shot of. Typically for me, it's going to be in the mouth. It's going to be bloody. Patients aren't going to see that. This does not go on our website. This does not go on our patient-driven social media. This is basically for myself, for my surgical implant Santa Instagram, and for teaching purposes. So I'm taking these photos that either I'm seeing something interesting that will highlight a point that I might want to make, you know, maybe a tip or a trick that's specific to this certain procedure, or it might be a series that I want to lay out step by step where I think someone needs to see this visually to be able to go, okay, this is step A, this is step B, this is step C, this is step D. I might not do that for every procedure. You know, certainly for every implant, I'm not pulling out my camera and taking, here's the ridge, here's my incision, here's the osteotomy. That would take way too long. So I'm taking specific cases that I might find interesting, or that I might find that I might expect the end result to be something that's special in some way, or just for myself. Like you said, I think you were talking a little bit about kind of before we started the recording, there's so many reasons you can use these photos. And sometimes these intraoral photos are good for you to look back at, and you learn, you see something, you're like, oh, well, shit, no wonder it failed because I missed this. Or, oh, look at that piece of granulation tissue. Like, I should have got that. Or, oh, look, my knot wasn't tight enough in this suture. That's why everything opened up. So you can learn from looking back over these photos. You can use those in lectures like, hey, don't do this, or hey, this should look like this. You brought up kind of an interesting point, though, when we were kind of in our pre-recording about potentially using photos for litigation protection. So I didn't hear the story, but I would love to hear what this was all about.
So, you know, there are so many reasons for photography, and, you know, everybody, I feel like Dennis, we jump down into the doom and gloom sometimes. And I had the fortunate or unfortunate opportunity to be involved with a little bit of litigation. And some of that was tied to emotional based dentistry with regards to cosmetics and aesthetics. And had I not documented pre-op, op, all my steps, post-op, I think I might have been in a very different situation. It was a situation with a veneer case where patient basically got a little bit, you know, and we've all seen that where we get a little dysmorphia of like patients forget what they used to look like. And patient later and, you know, almost a year later, just dissatisfied. Ultimately, what it came down to was the fact that I had really good documentation of the pre-op situation. I had excellent photography of my preps. I had screenshots of my design. I had, you know, bonding, and then I had 1 week, 2 week follow-ups. And so ultimately what happened was this whole litigation that this individual brought against me, their attorney threw it all out, not mine or anything like that. Their attorney was like, yeah, we got nothing. Like this case is totally within the scope of normal and we got nothing. And so what it highlighted for me was that it becomes this extra layer production from the standpoint of it's so multifactorial. The basic photography gives us our foundation to educate our patients. The next level is it gives us a foundation to help us level up as clinicians and move forward and get better and better and better. It helps our team members get better. And then on another level, it also protects us from those situations, those one-offs where there might be a legal issue where somebody might say we did this or that and you can go back. And ultimately, if you don't have it documented, it didn't happen. And in this day and age, it's so easy to document so well that really the excuse, we don't have any. The whole I'm too busy or don't have time is not really an excuse. It's just we need to approach our situation, like you said, is like, what are my pain points or what are my barriers to doing this? And whether it's like, hey, maybe I need to tweak my scheduling or maybe I just need to spend some time training my team or reviewing cases with my team every month or so. And making the availability and time all of a sudden allows you to just like blow up. And so like, Josh, this, I love this topic because photography, I mean, what I thought we were going to talk about totally was not what we talked about, which is fantastic because really what we were talking about is like, why on earth are we taking photos? Like, what is the purpose of why do we do photos? And I think it leaves us for another opportunity where I do think we need to get you back to talk about the details of like how we take the photos. What do you like to use? I mean, Josh uses some cool flash stuff and some, you know, how you do your social media and all that kind of stuff. I think that is the next level to this. But I think what we talked about tonight is so critical of like that core foundation of like, why do we do this? Why do we need to do this? Why is this so important? And I cannot emphasize enough, you guys, there was one piece of technology, one thing that I implore all of you to implement into your practice tomorrow or this on Monday or whenever is if you're not taking photos, just start. Start with whatever you have. It can be the crappiest photo ever. Just start taking photos. So Josh, thank you, man, for coming on here. You know, give us a little bit, you know, closing notes here with regards to like why you love photography, you know, how people can reach out to you. And for sure, we're going to have you back, man.
Yeah, I love so much of the stuff that we talked about tonight. I think just the thing about photography is, you know, it honestly makes me kind of a little bashful when you do an intro and you're like, oh, Josh's photos are so great. Like I looked at him because I look at my stuff and I'm like, this should be what everyone does. Like, I don't feel special because I think this should be what everyone does to document their cases, but it sets you at a different level. So, you know, for example, that attorney that was, you know, maybe reviewing your case or, you know, for the opponent, they probably looked at your photos and the documentation you had in that between that and your designs. And they thought, holy crap, this guy is at another level. We can't go against him because this guy's doing this stuff that no one else does. Like, look how clean these photos are. And it kind of made me think of when I was going through the process of applying and going through the process of becoming a diplomate in the American Board of Oral Implantology. There's a certain amount of cases that you have to do of a certain type, and you have to have these certain photos along the way. And so I did my presentation and I was like, I have all these other photos of these cases. I'm going to put these in. So I put these photos in that they didn't require, they didn't ask for, no one else is taking. You know, honestly, a lot of the other people that are applying are probably taking maybe iPhone photos. Maybe these are the first photos that they've ever taken. So I had, you know, hundreds of photos in these presentations where somebody else might have had, I don't know, 10 per case or 5 or 6 per case in the other ones. And I think it automatically sets you at a different level because you're doing these things and showing it and framing it in a way that other people aren't. Like, I don't feel special about my photography. It's just kind of what we do. And I think it's kind of sad that it's actually not that's considered at a higher level, because I think that's what we should all do. Like, I don't know. I'm just like a normal dude, Tim. You know me. Like, I'm just a normal guy. Like, have a general practice. I'm like not special. I've done these things enough to be able to like learn.
But what I love, and the reason I wanted you on for this topic, is that I do think everybody needs to check out Josh's Instagram, because Josh does highlight the journey of where you start and where you can go. And just like Josh and I are just normal clinicians, general practitioners, like we just saw the value of photography and what it does for your practice and for your patients and for your career and your everything else after that. So just start. I thank you guys for joining us tonight. This has been fun, Josh. We've got to do it again, hopefully sooner than later.
Can't wait.
Do it again. For everybody, if you want to check out more Josh, check out Implant Santa on Instagram. It's phenomenal. For everything else, if you want to get a hold of me, check out me on Tim Anderson DDS on Instagram. But for those of you trying to listen in, the best way to get a hold of us is actually on the 3D Dentist Pro app. Probably the easiest way, or if you want to check out everything that's going on within 3D Dentist, check out 3D-dentist.com. And we'll see you guys very soon. Josh, thanks, man. And everybody, we'll talk to you soon.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you get notified when all the new content is released. And don't forget to rate, review, and share this podcast with all your friends and colleagues. For more information about all things happening within the 3D Dentist family, follow us at www.3d-dentist.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you are leaving with new insights to help transform and level up your practice. Until next time, keep smiling.